At the time of the creation, God saw that it was not good that man was alone. And so, as we remember, God created woman and gave him a marriage relationship. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, it says, "And Jehovah God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him." And we skip down just a few verses to verse 21. It says, "And Jehovah God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which Jehovah God had taken from the man made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And the man said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." God saw that it was not good that man was alone. And so he provided for man a woman and provided for them the marriage relationship. This is where we see the divine institution of marriage being ordained of God. Just as each person in the spiritual family of God in the church has guidelines, if you will, by which we are to live, God has also given guidelines to govern the conduct of everyone in the physical family. The husband, the wife, the parents, the children, each have guidelines given to us by God. And we should understand what those guidelines are and submit ourselves to them. Many problems exist in families today because of a failure to understand their God-given roles. J. Adams wrote, "Almost without exception, we have found in counseling that when there have been other serious problems in a marriage, there also has been a problem of husband-wife role failure, usually taking the form of role reversal." And so they found that in marriages with serious problems, one thing seemed to be common among them, and that is that there was a failure on the part of the participants in that marriage, the husband, the wife, to understand their God-given role in that relationship. And he said at times it even manifests itself in the form of role reversal, where she's performing what should be his role and he's performing what should be her role. If you want to avoid problems in your marriage, or if you want to try and correct problems that have arisen, then devote yourself to understanding and following your God-given role in your family. Our lesson today is going to focus on some of those roles. And particularly, in our lesson today, we're going to focus on the role that man has within the family relationship. Now, let me say that we're going to talk about the husband and also the role of being father in a coming lesson in a couple of weeks. And so we're going to reserve our comments about his role, man's role as father in the house, and we'll focus our attention today on his role as husband. And really, that's where we want to begin this morning. We want to begin by looking at the concept of husband. Just notice the definition for the word husband, and we can find something. First of all, the word as we would use it today might simply mean a married man, a man who has a wife. But when we look at the old word from which it came, the English word that is translated husband, it came from an old Norse word, husbandi, meaning master of a house, which was borrowed into Old English as husbanda. That was the statement from the dictionary. Another dictionary source says that the word is house band, connecting and keeping together the whole family. He is the one who is the band around the house or the home, the one who fills the function of tying and holding it all together. It is to be, in fact, that person who is the stable center around which the home revolves, the one to whom his wife and children may look with respect and admiration. So just from the definition of the word husband, we can learn that the role that he fills in the home is an important one. He must fulfill his responsibility to tie and hold the whole family together. It is an awesome responsibility indeed. Well, let's notice some other points about his role in the family. Let's consider, first of all, that he is to leave father and mother. Now, we saw this in our reading in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24 a few moments ago. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Leaving mother and father in favor of a new relationship with his wife, it has many implications. For one, he leaves the headship of his parents to become the head of his own family. As long as they continue to live with father and mother, they are living under their authority. There is great wisdom, I think, in God's admonition that the newlywed couple immediately create their own household, where each spouse can fully establish his or her place according to God's prescription of marital roles. If after the wedding they are living with either his father or father-in-law, the new husband cannot become the head of his own household. In such a situation, the new husband is prevented from doing as God mandates, to be the head of his house, because they're living with someone else. They're living where someone else is the head. If one or the other is not emotionally mature enough to live away from their parents, then they're clearly not mature enough to be a husband or wife. But he also is to leave the financial support of his parents to provide for himself and for his own household. From the start, he must be in a position to provide for the needs of his newly formed family. If a couple is financially unprepared to strike out on their own, then they're better off waiting until they're ready to obey the Genesis precept, rather than find themselves in a position of having to lean on help from father and mother. But if you haven't already left father and mother, understand that you must do so when entering into the marriage. Now, secondly, let's consider this morning that he is to cleave to his wife. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. In Matthew chapter 19 and verses 5 and 6, we find the words of Jesus, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so they are no more two, but one flesh." And this was quoted in part from Genesis chapter 2 that we read earlier as well. But we discussed in previous lessons the idea of cleaving in this passage is the idea of being permanently glued or cemented to one another. God has joined the husband and wife together. There should be a melding of the two, wherein the welfare of the other is constantly our concern as well. They're to become one flesh, he said, and if we're one flesh, then surely we would also say one spirit as well. Thus, what is of interest and concern to the one will be as well to the other. The husband, as God would have him to be, is a man who is deeply interested and concerned with every aspect of her life. There will be no secrets between them because they're one. The godly husband sticks with his wife in and through all things, as our vows said, for better or for worse. His wife is to be the highest earthly loyalty, and he is to live for her and think of her and seek to please her before all others, including his own parents. His devotion now is to be to his wife. That's who his focus in life is to be on. That's during those childless years, even during the time that the children are there, during those times when they are going through those empty nest years and then the retirement portion of life. In all of those phases of life, she is to be the devotion, the focus of his life. He must not say or do anything that would ever suggest that another, whether a parent, a co-worker, a buddy, certainly not a friend of the opposite sex, is closer and more important to him than his wife. The closeness implied by the idea of cleaving suggests the couple continues to do those things that will draw them closer and closer to one another, making the bond stronger all along the way. Often couples, though, allow other things to interfere with the bonding process with their mate. It might be demands on the job, extended family matters, sports or recreational activities. It might even be when children come into the family that we take on new roles, as we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. But you know, not even our responsibilities to our children are to negate or to take precedence over our responsibility to our wives. We must not allow our children to think that they are more important to us than the beautiful bride we vowed to be fully devoted to till death do us part. Husbands, make time for your wife to do things together that will be a continual expression of your ever-abiding love and devotion to her. Well, let's consider something else. He is to be the head of his wife. This is from Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 23, where Paul said, "For the husband is the head of the wife, and Christ also is the head of the church, being himself the Savior of the body." Many have misunderstood the concept of the husband being the head of the wife. In fact, they think that if the husband is the head of the wife, then that means that they have the ability to rule over their wives, that they're to dictate what they can and cannot do. They feel that they would thus have the right before God to abuse or even misuse their wives. Such is not the biblical concept of the husband being the head of the wife. He's not a dictator over his wife and children, but he's to provide the leadership which the family requires. It is an imperative for the health of the family that the husband live up to the responsibility that he has to be the head of the family. The husband is to be the head of the family as Christ is the head of the church, he said. Christ is ruler, the ultimate source of appeal to the church. He provides sound leadership for the church, which is his bride. Jesus, as head of the church, can determine the extent of his rule. He has, in fact, left some things totally up to us, and in certain other matters, he's delegated oversight of local saints to local elders. Jesus isn't a tyrant over the church, neither does he abuse or misuse the church. And likewise for husbands. They're not to be tyrants over the church, over their wives, just like Christ wasn't with the church. They're to provide leadership for their wives, to be the ruler and the ultimate source of appeal. And he can again determine the extent of his rule. He may delegate certain responsibilities to his wife, such as the management of the checkbook, getting the bills when they come in, seeing to it that they are paid. And those kind of things. There might be any number of examples where you might delegate some authority, if you will, to your wife, and that's perfectly fine. Even so, the responsibility of properly leading the family is still ultimately the responsibility of the husband. Notice over in Ephesians 6 and in verse 4. And again, we're going to talk about the area of father and mother and children in a couple of weeks. But in Ephesians 6 and in verse 4, Paul said, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord." This is what Paul said to the fathers, to the men in the family, that they have a responsibility to lead their children in paths of righteousness. Fathers are to lead. And I maintain the same is true of a husband toward his wife. He is the head of the wife in the sense that he is to be a leader, and certainly he is to lead her in spiritual things. Remember back in Joshua 24 and in verse 15, here Joshua makes a statement. He said, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve Jehovah, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve Jehovah." Joshua didn't make the decision only for himself. He made the decision for he and his whole family that they were going to be servants of the Lord. That's what he was leading them in. The husband has a responsibility before God to be the head of his wife and family, leading them in paths of righteousness. And as the head of his house, he must not allow either his parents or his in-laws to exert control over any part of their marriage. He must step up and take the leadership role and refuse efforts of anyone else to be a leader of his family. Mothers, fathers, do not interfere with your son or son-in-law's responsibility of being the head of their house. Husbands and wives, do not discuss intimate or personal problems in your marriage with your parents. Husbands, don't put your wife in the position where she feels compelled to take the lead in the family just because you are failing to do the job yourself. Step up and take the responsibility of being the head of your wife, of being the head of your family, and lead them in all things, especially in things pertaining to God. But something else we want to notice about man's role in the family, and that is he is to honor his wife. And this is taken from 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 7. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, Peter wrote these words. He says, "Ye husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the woman, as unto the weaker vessel, as being also joint heirs of the grace of life, to the end that your prayers be not hindered." Many wives are taken for granted. But honor is to be given unto them, giving honor unto the woman, he said. Honor is the manifestation of respect. If we have the respect that we need to have for our beautiful wife, then we will show honor unto her. Peter's instruction, then, suggests respect and esteem and treatment that is expressive of proper honor, both by word and in deed. She's to be honored. And he said, she's to be honored as the weaker vessel. Now, some believe that this has reference to the physical weakness of the woman in comparison to the man, and that's certainly true. Others believe that it is better explained in that she is to be honored as a piece of fine china rather than a piece of everyday stoneware. Henry Thayer, in his Greek English Lexicon, talked about this word. He said it is the comparison that the comparison is to commend to husbands the obligations of kindness towards their wives. For weaker the vessels, the greater must be the care lest they be broken. And so indeed, men, we have an awesome responsibility to show honor unto our wife because she's the weaker vessel. Because she is a fellow heir of the grace of life. And he also said, lest our prayers be hindered. We want to make sure that we get our job right, that we fulfill our responsibilities to our wife, because if not, our prayers are going to be hindered. Our spiritual life is going to be affected. Husbands should honor their wives since she has honored her husband. Of all the men that she could have chosen to give herself and her life to, she chose you. And in turn, you ought to show honor unto her. We need to show our wives just how much we respect them and appreciate all that they do for us. Without their help, it would not be possible for the husband to fulfill their role as head of the family. One other verse I wanted to notice here. In Romans 13 and verse 7, Paul says, "Render to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." And so let's honor our wives. That is a responsibility we have in the home. But something else from this same passage. We're to dwell with our wives, not according to lust, but according to knowledge, as wise and sober thinking men who know the word of God and their own duty toward their wife. We need to dwell with our wife because of the knowledge and understanding we have of our responsibilities within the home, and that we're thus fulfilling those responsibilities. We need to dwell with our wives, as Marvin Vincent said, with an intelligent recognition of the nature of the marriage relationship. We need to show that we have an intelligent recognition of the nature of the marriage relationship. I like that. A lot of young men are entering into the marriage relationship without an intelligent recognition of the marriage relationship. But we need to dwell with our wives with knowledge. It also suggests, of course, knowing her and knowing what she needs, knowing what her thought processes are, and thus giving her due honor for all, again, that she thinks and does for us. We're also to provide for the needs of our wife, and that would include physical needs. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 8 says, "But if any provideth not for his own, and specially his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." The husband is the one charged by God to provide food, clothing, shelter, just every need that might be had by the family. He has the responsibility of providing that. Notice it is talking to the man. "But if any provideth not for his own." Providing for your own means supplying everything that your wife and family has need of. to neglect any part of it makes you worse than an unbeliever. Makes you worse than an infidel, as some translations have. But another need that we have the responsibility to fulfill is the need for intimacy. And we'd note just 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and the first 5 verses of that chapter, where we read, "Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of fornications, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife her due, and likewise also the wife unto her, the husband. And the wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be by consent for a season, that ye may give yourselves unto prayer, and may be together again, that Satan tempt you not because of your incontinency." It is within the marriage relationship that God has provided for the satisfaction of intimate desires, of the sexual urges that God placed within man. And so, we need to make sure that we fulfill our responsibilities one to another in this area to each other. But also, emotional needs. The godly husband understands the emotional needs of his wife and will see that they are all satisfied. That may be saying, I love you and thank you from time to time. Of course, hugs and kisses and just talking with one another. It may be that will do an awful lot to meet those emotional needs. Just being a listening ear when she's had a tough day will go a long way. Also, of course, spiritual needs. Men, we have the responsibility to be the supplier of the spiritual needs of the family, because we're joint heirs of the grace of life, as he had said in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7 that we read earlier. Nothing better complements the efforts of a wife trying to serve the Lord than a faithful husband doing the same. And so we're to help provide for the spiritual needs that are there. And so those are our responsibilities that we have in providing for her. But also one other point we'll make, and that is, he is to truly love his wife. And this is taken from Ephesians 5, verses 25 through 33. But such a love is the summation, really, of all that the husband should be and do. The husband's love for his wife, when compared in Ephesians 5 to Christ's love for the church, shows us the kind of love that we're to have. Christ had a sacrificial love for the church. He was willing to give up his own self in order for the benefit of the church. If we love our wife, we'll be willing to give up our own self for her. It's a preeminent love. He said, as their own bodies, verse 28. It's truly caring, even as himself, he said in verse 33 of Ephesians 5. So let's truly love our wives. Give her all that she has a right to receive from us, her husband. And so we've touched on a number of things this morning. And when husbands fail to honor their wives or joyfully live with them and cleave to them, then we endanger the most fundamental and intimate relationship that God designed for mankind. We become the problem. We become the source of trouble within that relationship. And so it's imperative, men, that we fulfill our role in the relationship of marriage for our family to be as God would have it to be. Now, we're going to sing in just a few moments a song to encourage you to make things right with God. And we want you to think about God's family, the spiritual family of God, that we have roles to fulfill even within the spiritual family, just like we've seen this morning that men have within the physical family. Are you fulfilling your responsibilities? Are you a part of the family? We'd encourage you first and foremost to become a child of God, to become a Christian, that you can begin living the kind of life that Christ would have you to live. But recognize that there are responsibilities. Just as you need to recognize there are responsibilities for you as a young man entering into the marriage relationship, there are responsibilities for you if you want to become a Christian, if you want to join into the family of God. Are you willing to fulfill them? Are you willing to devote yourself to your Lord? Are you willing to be truly the bride of Christ, as Jesus describes the church? Well, we hope and pray that you do. We hope that you'll make the decision even this morning to become a Christian. If you've done that and you've not been living up to your role within the church, you've failed to fulfill your responsibilities, then we want to encourage you to repent, come back to the Lord. We'd be happy to pray with and for you. Won't you come? While together we stand and while we sing.